You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Massive Report podcast, where the winning comes easy. I'm Brian Phillips. Got a full house here today. Ori Benatar, Alex Stanek, Murph is here. Bart Logan is here, sort of. Bart, my computer says your bandwidth is low. And Sam Fahmy is running the controls. He'll try to keep Bart on the air. Bart, are you on the air? Can we hear you? We cannot.
Right. He's muted.
Yep. That.
So give me a testing. I'm no longer muted. Bart.
I'm here. I don't know.
This is like peak 2020/2021.
It's bad, Bart. Bart just moved into a new home. He has dial-up.
And we just lost him completely.
Maybe you've run out of your 1,048 AOL minutes. Better check the meter and see how many.
Got to put the disc back in. Get the new one going.
All right. Well,
what's AOL?
I'm trying to shut up. Shut up, you. You know what AOL is. Come on. You've heard it. Your parents told you about it.
They did.
Damn it, Ori, I didn't think you'd go down that path.
Nah. I know about AOL. My girlfriend's parents still pay for AOL, so that's a fun fact.
Do they?
I think so. I don't know if they do anymore, but that's one thing that she told me when we first started dating.
I think it's free now.
But you got AOL with like MSN, still using Yahoo email, you know, maybe some Hotmail in the mix.
Got some ICQ in the works.
Exactly. Well, listen to our internet snobbery. Despite all that, we'd ask that you like and subscribe, please. And also, we thank again our sponsor, Saucy Brew Works, there on 3rd downtown. We're hearing awesome things about the food. We're going to be doing the podcast there soon. We already know the beer is wonderful. I'm going to the game on Sunday. Will Saucy be there? I hope so, because I will be racing to the Saucy beer desk, hoping to beat Bart and be first in line on Sunday for my first crew games. It's March 1st of 2020, and I cannot wait. Secured my tickets this afternoon. I'm good to go for a big match against the Supporters Shield winners, Philadelphia, who flamed out in the playoffs. We'll get to them more because they have a bigger test than we do in this CONCACAF Champions League. We'll talk about that tackle in the Philadelphia game the other night as well, because a lot of those storylines were more interesting than this 4-0 leg one win over Real Esteli down in Managua, Nicaragua last Thursday. Fellas, that was not a good team. And for criticism of a not good team, of course, I look to you, Alex. What do you think of Real Esteli? Am I missing something?
No, I mean, I think if you listen to the podcast that we did 2 weeks ago, I think I pretty much called this one. I mean, they, you know, my standard practice for judging a team or a player that I have literally never heard of before is to see how many followers they have on Instagram. And they didn't have that many. I took a look on Google at their stadium. It was super small and pretty ugly. And so you put those two factors together, and yeah, they were going to get steamrolled. That's all you need. That's all. You look at their stadium, you look at their following, you know, fans are good, but fans are also a little bit fickle, you know, and if you're not very good, you know, they'll move elsewhere. So, you know, shout out to Pat Murphy wearing the Lakers shirt on our podcast here today, you know, great example of how, you know, even if you're in Ohio, sometimes you don't always cheer for the local team. So, you know,
they have a pretty big following though. So by your theory, they should be pretty good.
And they are extremely good. So just proving my point here, they have a lot of Instagram followers, I'm sure. So, you know, I think that they were always going to have a tough match against the Crew. The Crew are a very, very good team. I think when you look ahead at who the Crew play in the next round, potentially, it's going to be the same situation in reverse. The Crew are going to be the team that's really going to be up against it. But I thought the team played really well. I thought it was an entertaining game. You got to see all these different guys come out, not just the starters, but second half, you saw a lot of rotation as well. So a good match to kind of get the season started with, and great results. So super happy to see that.
Murph, did you catch the story during the game? They didn't spend a lot of time on it, but Esteli's coach, did I catch this right? He's 24 years old.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, he's like younger than Ori is.
That's crazy.
He is.
Yeah.
Because I'll be 25 in exactly a month, so I could be a manager in Nicaragua right now instead of being on this podcast.
Yeah, well, let's be clear that this is a good team in Nicaragua. I mean,
very good.
As poor as they looked on Thursday night, and credit to the crew for that. You know, this is a very successful club. So yeah, in their own country at least. So you know, to have a manager that young. I don't know a ton about him, but it sounds like he must have done something to get that job, because you know there's plenty of people that would have stepped in and you know taken over that club, I imagine.
His captain is 37.
Yeah. So,
that's just nuts. I thought that was a very entertaining story.
Yeah, he was on the coaching staff, I guess, and then their manager a couple seasons ago either got fired or left. I'm not quite sure. And then kind of they, I guess, have some sort of like a playoff type system in Nicaragua as well. And he was kind of the interim coach that went into this like postseason tournament, and they ended up winning the whole thing. And so then they offered him the job. But yeah, I mean, he's younger than most of the crew squad, which is kind of weird. But you know, maybe they should have hired an older coach. I don't know. Maybe they should have got somebody in their 30s or 40s and they wouldn't have got blown out. So, you know, I wish him nothing but the best in his future career. But he's going to have to come to Columbus and get stomped again. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's a tall order for any coach of any age.
Didn't he already win the league with them like twice?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think they won last year both of their titles first half and second half.
The last 20 years, they've been the dominant team in that league down there in Nicaragua. And now they come north with a tall order and, mathematically speaking, almost impossible. Ori, you've crunched the numbers. With a 4-0 lead going into leg two and the crew sitting on 4 tiebreaker road goals, do they have any chance?
Well, after my detailed and very significant number crunching, I came up with my great 6x6 chart taking a look at, and you can see it on the Massive Report Twitter and Instagram for a little guide where you can see each score line from 0 to 5 for each team who would advance. Essentially, Esteli needs at least 4 goals to have any odds. If they win 4-0, the match goes to penalties, which there's no extra time, straight to penalty kicks. Because the only way you can go to extra time or penalties in a 2-legged tie with away goals is if you mimic the score home and away. Oh, I'm clipping out. That's fun. And then if they score 5, then they would need the crew to not score 2. Because if Esteli wins 5-1, then they would advance on that extra road goal. But it's 5 or 4 at least. But if the crew lose 3-0 on Thursday, they still advance. That's how much they are in this easy, good position to advance on aggregate to the next round. And I fully expect them to advance even with a ton of rotation coming on Thursday. And they're probably going to end up playing Monterrey from Mexico in the quarterfinals, which that first leg would be after the bye week and at the very end of April.
Well, that comes up a lot sooner than I thought. And that's as Alex mentioned, that's a whole other deal.
Yeah, the very end of April is only two weeks away.
Yeah. So, yeah, this team has a lot of important matches to play, and Thursday would be the least important at this point because you have to feel like they're going to get through. And they need a night off for some of these guys, because the one thing we came home with, besides 4 goals, was injuries. And Murph, what are you hearing from crew camp about NTN and Nagby and Santos in particular?
Santos apparently was not hobbled, because when I asked Caleb Porter about it, he looked at me like I had 12 heads. So apparently he's good to go.
Okay.
I guess he just needed to come out of the game.
Okay.
But the rest of the guys, it's going to be questionable whether or not they're available for Thursday. It sounds like, aside from Kevin Molino, who, you know, obviously the news came out today, he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with a hamstring injury, which is unfortunate because, you know, he's obviously a guy of the offseason additions they made, probably the only one that was going to on paper at least, be a regular starter. The other guys, certainly contributors, but more depth pieces, you would think. And unfortunate for Molino, who's battled two ACL injuries in his career and apparently had to deal with hamstring stuff last year. But the other guys, Harrison Offal, could be back Thursday, Etienne as well. And if not for some of these guys, Porter said, you know, Sunday and then certainly after the bye week. So they all sounded like relatively minor issues, whether it was guys that picked up injuries in the game or guys that were unavailable ahead of the game. Sounds like, you know, this team will get healthy, knock on wood, here pretty quickly.
And Bart checking in via shortwave radio to tell me in my earpiece that the other thing that the crew come home with are yellow card cautions. And I'm not up to speed on how card accumulation works in this particular competition. Bart, can you speak to that if we can hear you? I see your picture. No. Can anyone else speak to that?
All right. Basically,
technical difficulties, folks. Yeah.
I tried, Bart.
Hopefully soon we don't have to deal with this anymore when we are back in person. But Ori, correct me if I'm wrong, but two yellow cards in a series and you're out, right?
Pretty much. Nice. So four crew players got yellow cards in the first leg. It was Mensa, Nagby, Morris, and Francis. So I would suspect that Mensa doesn't, in terms of the players that are available for health, Nagby's probably not going to play on Thursday. He got an MRI today, as in this Monday, but he's unlikely to play on Thursday. And my guess is Caleb Porter was preparing for rotation anyway. So in that center midfield spot, you're looking at maybe Artur to start for the game, maybe play 45, 50, 60 minutes, and then probably Perry Kitchen or Aiden Morris. But if you start Mensa and Morris both on yellows and they happen to get a yellow card in this home leg on Thursday, they can't play in the first leg against Monterrey. Wow. I don't know whether or not the first leg will be in Columbus or Mexico. I'm not sure on that yet, but I would personally expect Caleb Porter to sit Jonathan Mensa, sit Aiden Morris too, just to be safe, because it's not like the crew have to go out there and do the same thing they did in Nicaragua and score four goals in the first half and just dominate, because all they need to do is just hold their own, nice, simple, you know, 90 minutes. Don't go crazy with it. Make sure that you've got your best guys available for a really tough quarterfinal against Monterrey, unless they get upset by Atletico Pantoja, and then the crew have yet another fortune-defying upset that happens for them, just like we saw in the MLS Cup playoffs last year, where they got to be at home the whole time, and they got to play Nashville instead of Toronto.
That seems unlikely, given the scoreline of that first leg. I think it was ended 3-0. I turned it off after that. But yeah, I expected rotation regardless. You know, I think when you're up 4-0, you know, we also have to consider that there's the game on Sunday. And obviously you're playing a team that won the Supporters Shield last year. You know, I think that they were preparing, assuming that they got a comfortable win, to rotate regardless. The interesting one for me is Jonathan Mensa, because Caleb Porter said today that, that Abubakar Keita is at the end of his protocol. Now I don't know if that has to do with coming back from his time with the under 23s or if there's other things going on there, but you know, if he's not available and you want to rotate Jonathan Mensa out to avoid the yellow card, then is Vito ready to go? Probably not ready to start and play a full game. So are you going to start Grant Lillard for the first time? You know, we haven't seen him suit up for a crew game. This may be a time you get him out there and see what he can do if you need to, again, up 4-0. So, but yeah, I mean, Jonathan Mensa has been so consistent. He's probably a guy that in a pinch you could, you know, rely on and just hope he's careful. But as Ori said, you don't want to lose him if you're going to have to play Monterrey, especially if that first game's on the road. That could be really tough without your captain.
Well, yeah, those are draconian rules as far as the card cautions are concerned. That's almost more important than minor nagging injuries in terms of making the squad, huh, Ori?
Yeah, and I just wanted to bring up it's kind of an interesting factoid. I'm not sure if it's like this for the CONCACAF Champions League, but at least I know for the World Cup and in other competitions in Europe, this whole yellow card accumulation was shifted to having everything be canceled out before the semifinals, because what happened in the 2002 World Cup when Michael Ballack got a second yellow card in the semi against South Korea and then couldn't play in the final against Brazil. So my guess is it's probably similar in CONCACAF. So let's say, you know, Jonathan Mensah still has that yellow card. They play against Monterrey. They potentially advance to the semifinals going into August. But hopefully the rule is similar to the World Cup or the Champions League, where those yellow cards won't carry over to the semi. So then if Mensah gets a yellow in the semi, then the crew, he would be out for the final. So just an interesting tidbit about this whole yellow card accumulation rule.
That was really just karma for Michael Ballack, who was a cheating piece of crap. Especially
in the World Cup. Okay. I agree.
That quarterfinal, that handball on the line, and yeah, man, US, that was their best chance to make a World Cup semifinal since what, 1930?
Aiden Morris.
I don't know. I wasn't alive then.
I don't think I was either. I mean, it's possible that I was. Hey, I know we were just talking about Aiden Morris and sitting on a yellow card. Can I just put a star on the top of his page again? He was so good again the other night. And the thing that impresses me about him is that I probably said the same thing last winter when we won the cup. He's always in the right place at the right time. And again, I didn't see him make any mistakes. I don't know if you guys did. Murph, did you see him do anything wrong?
No, he was great again. And, you know, building off of that MLS Cup final performance, which is interesting because, you know, we saw him some last year and he was good in his performances. But I think these last two games have really stood out. And, you know, I think if you talk to the coaching staff, they started to see some of this emerging from him, you know, and obviously electing to start him in this game, electing to keep him over Sebastian Berhalter when one of these guys needed to go on loan. So clearly a statement made by Caleb Porter, forced a little bit with Artur coming back from an injury. But I think you've got something pretty special here. You know, he had that acrobatic shot early in the game that, you know, forced a pretty impressive save. So, yeah, I mean, this is a kid that should keep growing. He's going to get his opportunities. I think they like him. So I'm really interested to follow his career and, you know, especially being a homegrown kid.
And Ori, obviously the biggest surprise when we saw the lineup flash on the screen the other night was that Derek Ntien was playing right back. And yeah. I was like, oh, I really want to see this. I knew athletically that he could handle it, but did he have the defensive chops to cover when he needed to? What'd you think of his performance back there?
I think it's a small sample size, but also face it, he didn't face a great team. But I think in the time that in that clip that he played at right back, the last time he played right back was a little over a year ago. I think he was just fine. I think obviously because he's an attacking winger, you saw him overlap more and be in more attacking positions rather than stay back and defend. Luis Diaz, especially when you have Diaz on that right side, he's somebody that likes to track back and defend as well. So that's very helpful when you have someone like Derek Ntien at right back. And it'll be curious to see if he has a couple of other appearances in that position, potentially, if they're watching Harrison off Fool's Minutes, if Marlon Hairston doesn't have as many appearances. I would expect Hairston to be the first choice right back. I know Alex has got something to say.
Oh, well, all I was going to say was I thought he did really, really well in that role. Again, yeah, we want to see him against better opponents for sure. But maybe he's at least an option against, you know, really terrible opponents like FC Cincinnati, you know, somebody you can just kind of throw in there from time to time.
You get so excited whenever you can get that dig in.
I know what you're talking about.
To the south.
And I mean, at the very least, you want to try and have a potential third option in those fullback roles in case something drastic happens. So Derek Ntien can potentially step in if Afful and Hairston are on minutes restriction or injured or whatnot. And then in that left back spot, you've got Valenzuela, Waylon Francis. Maybe you put him in that left back position as well, potentially, who knows. But, you know, even with the Molino injury and these other injuries happening, you know, Caleb Porter's like, we're just fine. We can win games with the guys that we have. They added these depth pieces for a reason. It's being tested out early, and this week will be the test. Esteli first, then Philly.
Yeah, anytime you want a player to get forward, like, I feel like Etienne's not a bad guy to throw in that role. Like, he can play all over the place. He's a really, really talented kid.
Yeah,
and he's good enough to win MLS Cup.
Yeah.
What you saw from the crew, too, is they kept Milton Valenzuela much further back than we see him a lot. You know, it was almost like not exactly three in the back, but he wasn't making those normal runs and stuff that we've gotten used to. So clearly a tactical thing there. So let's keep composed defensively, because we know, you know, Etienne's game is not on the defensive side of the ball generally.
And Bart, can we hear you? Can you hear us? I want to include you, my friend.
Clear.
That's pretty good. We saw Parente, the guy that's been drawing so much buzz here in the preseason, as much as he can, considering that you know, the press can't cover the preseason as they would in previous years. What'd you think of his performance while you were out there? Did you get any impressions?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was you know, genuine. He didn't really, you know, stick out, but I think that I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it would, especially with that comfortable cushion that you've got, I'd like to see him get a little bit more of a run in the second leg. Because obviously he's a guy that, you know, they hold in really high regard. I think, you know, there's discussion. He would have been a first round pick in the super draft had, you know, likely had he not signed that contract with him. So, you know, and any chance you get a chance to give this guy some action in a meaningful game, albeit maybe not against the best opponent. I'd like to see him get a good run on Thursday. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that could certainly start the game on Thursday. I would not be surprised by that at all. And that's a great experience for him, for the homegrown Parente.
And one thing Caleb Porter told us in the preseason was they'd experimented with him just because of guys missing time as playing the number 10, that he can play some of those attacking midfield positions as well, and surprised them with how well he did when asked to play those roles. So I don't think that's something – it's kind of like with Derek Etienne, you know, if he's having to play out of position, you're probably in trouble because other guys are out, but maybe not trouble, but you know, you're not in where you want to be health-wise. But if you're in a pinch, like with Etienne, he's a guy who can do a little bit more than just play one of those two central midfield spots.
All right. I think we could kind of put a bow on that 4-0 win over Real Esteli. Should we make our picks for Thursday now? And then get into Philadelphia, because that's Sunday evening.
Might as well. Scoreline on Thursday is not going to make much of a difference to get to the quarterfinals. So let's do it. Let's see if Sam can get another score right.
All right. Sam, you can go first.
3-0 Columbus.
What was it? What was that?
3-0 Columbus.
3-0 Columbus. So 7-0 on the aggregate, according to my feeble math skills. Bart, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right. Quickly get into your score.
All the time. 3-1. Sticking with that.
3-1. All right. Murph?
Yeah, I'm going to say 2-0. I think they, you know, play it conservatively and, you know, don't try and overdo anything. So, you know, you get a couple goals for the crew. Maybe a Bradley Wright Phillips brace. You know,
that
I usually
would be
pick
nice.
Scores, but I have to imagine you give Bradley Wright Phillips a start. But Giassi, sure. Even though Giassi plays, you know, most of the minutes, I don't think you want to risk anything going into Sunday.
And here's a guy that would probably like to get the minutes in, knowing what his role is going to be this season. Just get in there and get a good sweat going. So I got no problem with that. Ori?
Yeah, I think the crew are going to play it pretty conservative on Thursday. I'm just going to say 1-0 for a simple scoreline, but I think this would be a great opportunity for all these different role players to get a start, knowing the schedule that's coming up with MLS season starting and the opponents at bay. So maybe we see Evan Bush in goal. Maybe Grant Lillard makes his crew debut if Jonathan Mensah doesn't start. We'll see if Vito is healthy enough maybe to play Thursday. I don't suspect so. So maybe Sunday we see him back in black and gold. Matana is not with the team yet, so we won't see him for Thursday, maybe on the bench on Sunday, but he's still going through his you know, medical evaluations, and then we'll start training with the team soon. But yeah, I agree with Pat. You know, let's see Isaiah Parente maybe get a start. This is a great opportunity for him. And I think Bradley Wright Phillips should get a looking too, maybe scoring a goal. So I'll say 1-0. I don't think it's going to be much of a game on Thursday.
Alex?
I think it's going to be 2-0. I think that all of the yellow carded players are going to be rested except for Aiden Morris, who's going to score an absolute thunderbolt. And then I'm with Murph at least halfway. I think BWP is going to get one as well. But I think the highlight of the night is going to be a really amazing goal from Aiden Morris. I think, you know, shades of Will Trapp, you know, something from distance there. I think he's just going to you know, let it fly. So we'll see. Right. Fingers Fair crossed.
Enough. Fair enough. All right. I'm kind of conservative on this one, too. I don't think that we're going to get too adventurous here. I'll say 2-0 as well. And I forgot to mention one thing about the game last Thursday was Mensah scoring a goal. It looked better in real time than it did in slow motion.
And he scored off a corner. And I was the one whining about this all of last year, how bad the crew were at corners. And they scored on a corner on the first game of the season.
I know.
And Morehouse had a good chance off a corner, too.
It was partial luck. I mean, the way he hit the ball, he just kind of – it was a good run to the near post. No one was marking him, but he got a touch on that, and the ball kind of like floated Rocket League style over like four people's heads.
Yeah, it was not, and he would probably tell you it was not. It's not how he dreamed of it. Let's put it that way. So, did everyone get their picks in? Because Bart, not being able to see Bart, I'm getting all confused here. Bart, are you okay?
Oh, I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah. No, 3-1. I'm still sticking with 3-1. I do
make
like
sure
the
everybody got BWP theirs in.
Brace though.
Yeah, I think now we're talking. I'll give both of my goals to him. 2-0 is what I say. All right, Philadelphia played Saprissa of Costa Rica in this competition, and it was a much closer game, 1-0. And we talk about that rugged challenge in stoppage time. Is there anyone here that does not think that that's a direct red card, any sort of sanctioned event on this planet, except apparently this game? Am I missing something here? Kai Wagner got chopped down like a tree. If you haven't seen the video yet, just fire it up on YouTube or whatever. I mean, am I wrong here? Am I missing something?
Anybody? It was all ball, Brian. It was all ball. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, I felt terrible for the guy.
It was a red.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It was a red. It should have been a red. It was a clear red. And I don't know. And the ref pulled out a yellow instantaneously after the challenge.
Yeah.
I don't know how. There's no VAR yet. There will be in the semifinals. But if the Premier League VAR saw that, the yellow would have held. But hopefully CONCACAF VAR, well, maybe CONCACAF VAR reversed the yellow and he'd be not carded. But more Philly players got carded in the altercation post-tackle than for the actual tackle.
So there, how many of their players, and were there any important ones that got yellows during that altercation?
This
could become a problem for
Blanco,
them.
Blanco, Solera, and Barantes got yellows. So you've got basically two – and Montero and – Glesnes had yellows too, so there was plenty of yellow in this game. I'm actually not sure that this app might be a little. I am right. Real Montero and Glesnes. So yeah, Montero and Glesnes are probably Philly's, you know, two of Philly's best players that have yellow cards. So I don't know if we see them against Saprissa, but I did see on the Extra Time podcast that MLS does. They were discussing how these Costa Rican teams are going to have some players not travel to the United States because of the way that COVID restrictions are with people who went to Europe in a certain time span. So Saprissa and Alajuelense, who's going to play Atlanta on Tuesday, might be missing some key players.
Yeah. Ori, you sweet summer child. It this is what would have happened if they would have had VAR in place for this goal. Let me just break this down for you.
Thank you.
There would have been cleats straight through this guy's ankle, right? He goes flying. They would have stopped play. They would have taken a look at the VAR. They would have said, it's been confirmed. It's a yellow card. He did not do a full flip.
Would have removed the yellow.
Stand on his feet.
Yeah, that's what I said. They removed the yellow.
Yeah, it's only a red card if he does a full flip and then lands on his broken ankle. Then it's red.
Yes.
But it would have been confirmed as a yellow, and play would have continued.
No blood, no foul.
So let me ask you this. I don't know who would know this, but the pool of referees for this competition, is it the same? Are they traveling? In other words, will this center ref for this match who missed that call, does he work up here in the States? Do we know? Because I feel like...
I don't believe it's like certain. I think they are assigned per game. So I don't think it's like the same referees will then referee the exact same second leg.
I don't
At least
think...
that's how it generally works.
I can't imagine that if this match was in Philadelphia, that wouldn't have been a red card. I mean, you got to think. It's
CONCACAF, though. It's CONCACAF.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. So. It's like, it's this weird, you know, you don't think it's going to be a red, or you think it's going to be red, and it just never is a red card. I don't know. It is an incredibly entertaining tournament.
It's
purely because of how much of a circus it is.
It's the same way as if you look at the box score for the Carew game, you'll see that both teams had four yellows each. But if you actually watch the game, you realize that one team, like somebody would breathe, like a Carew player would breathe on another player and they'd get a yellow, but the other team would, you know, hard tackle in the ankles and the knees and nothing happens.
Well, because you want it to be even. You want it to be even. So you can't have so 11 against 12. More fouls than the other. So you've got to just, okay, Carew have four. If they get four yellows, then Carew have four.
In the first half, Aiden Morris got elbowed when he was just running out of bounds for a throw-in. And Esteli guy threw a slight elbow and Mensah came to back him up. And Mensah got a yellow. I thought there was a mixture in that reaction, but that's the kind of stuff that happens in this competition.
I mean, also Francis is yellow. Did he like sneeze on somebody because he had just?
Yeah, he was on for like 20 seconds.
Just came on. Yeah, that was like Steven Gerrard stuff.
Oh,
if you wanted professional refereeing, you should have watched WrestleMania last weekend. You would have seen better refs than you'll ever see in CONCACAF. It is what you get. You get what you get from it. You just have to live with it. That's part of the wild card nature of this glorious tournament that we're currently taking place in. That's what makes it fun. You know, I'm glad that Philly player didn't have his leg completely snapped, which is probably the most likely outcome if you do that challenge 10 times. Par for the course for CONCACAF, right?
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Well, certainly Philadelphia has a much bigger challenge, even with Saprissa missing people. That's a good team for Costa Rica. 1-0 Philly was the result. So they're going to have to put their best foot forward if they care about this competition at all. And then they got to turn around and come to Columbus on Sunday and play at 5:30 for the MLS opener. Murph, how does the Philadelphia roster look compared to several months ago when they bowed out of the playoffs in disappointing fashion for them?
It is different. You've certainly got some turnover. Obviously, Aronson was the big name last year. He made the move overseas after the season was over. I watched some of that Saprissa game just to kind of get a sense, and I'll definitely watch the next one more closely, but It's definitely some new pieces, you know, and I think you're motivated. You're happy with what you were able to do last year if you're Philly, right? But you're motivated because of that playoff loss. So, you know, I think when you had some guys that had done well and depart, you need to go out and find some new pieces. And I think it's going to be a matter of, do these guys fit as well? Because that was a team that was really kind of built, you know, in a very mid-market MLS way. It wasn't a ton of big signings and whatnot, and so now they're doing things a little bit different, so it'll be interesting to see if Jim Curtin can re-find that same type of magic he was able to build with that squad that kind of came up together.
Well, it sounds to me, Ori, like the Carew went about filling the cupboard with pieces that would help for this busy season of competitions. Do you see that Philly was able to do anywhere remotely the same?
I mean, no one really did anything remotely the same compared to the Carew's offseason. I mean, most pundits and fans of the league can agree that the Columbus Carew just had an offseason far better than most other team, really any other team in MLS, just based on the amount of players they added and keeping their championship core. But Philadelphia has an interesting challenge ahead of them because you have Brendan Aaronson and Mark McKenzie, two MLS best 11 players from last season that made the jump to Europe, Aaronson going to Austria and McKenzie going to Belgium. So now you're putting more pressure on Montero as your central attacking midfield creative player instead of Brendan Aaronson, who might be with the United States senior team at the Gold Cup this summer. Shabilko and Santos are going to have to step up and score some more goals for Philly, and Glesnes and Blake in the back there. Andre Blake's still one of the best goalkeepers in the league. So Philly is going to be amongst the contenders. And what's interesting is you've got, you know, this conference heavy schedule for the entire course of the MLS season. Each team's only playing two teams outside of conference. And I personally think, and I'm curious to see what the rest of you guys say, I personally think that the Eastern Conference is stronger than the Western Conference. I think there are more teams that can contend in the East compared to the West, because I think in the East, you've got Columbus. I think Miami's going to have a better season now with, you know, full body of work just based on their roster. I think Nashville's still going to be decent. New England has kept most of their core and added a couple pieces. New York City, the Red Bulls, Orlando, Philly, and Toronto. I think the East is better than the West.
Well, I certainly was impressed with Nashville in the playoffs. I feel like they were a tough out. I like their roster for an expansion team. They're going to be play everybody hard. I think you're right. And we saw that last year as well, that the East was certainly superior to the West. But of course, Alex would say, well, yeah, but they don't get to play Cincinnati three times. So that's a good point, Alex, I just made for you.
It's a really good point. Really good point.
I will point out Matt Doyle, armchair analyst, I think supporting your argument, Ori, points out that seven of the 10 teams with the best transfer market value for their teams are all Eastern Conference, and Portland and Seattle 9 and 10 rounded that list out.
Wow.
The only other Western Conference team up there is Minnesota United. But I think that's maybe not a great metric, because FC Cincy makes it into the top 10 when you count that. And that's just because they splurged during the off season. But we all know that that's not going
to
do it.
Yeah. And if you look at the West, I mean, who would we say are contenders in the West? I point to LAFC, Minnesota, Seattle, KC, and maybe Portland. LAFC, Minnesota, KC, Seattle, maybe Portland. You're looking at maybe four or five teams in the West that are going to contend. And a lot of people are pinpointing teams in the West that could have the worst records in the league, the likes of maybe Houston. I think a lot of people are pointing at RSL as not being a very strong team this year. We'll see what Austin comes up with. Expansion teams have been able to have great early seasons in this league before, except for FC Cincinnati. But, you know, I think the West is a lot weaker than the East. And another thing that's interesting is that the LA Galaxy are not being talked about as, you know, a powerhouse. You know, they didn't make the playoffs last year, and this year there's not a lot of talk about them, you know, being as much of a contender. Sure, they've got Greg Vanney there now, Chicharito in another season, but without the Galaxy as sort of that big team in the West, the East is really taking over as the big conference, and with Joseph Martinez coming back for Atlanta.
Yeah, I just think back to an LA game that I watched last season. It ended like, what was it, 6-1 or 6-2 or something?
It was like 6-3 at MLS's back, right? 6-2?
I forget, but it was just like the Galaxy's with just their defending was just really sad. And it was rather stunning to see a Galaxy team that's been handed every advantage. Maybe not so much anymore that you have LAFC as well, but it was stunning to see them struggle so much. Well, is there anything that it's really hard to know what our 11 is going to be on Sunday, having not played Thursday's game yet? Do we have any indication, Murph, as to how maybe Caleb Porter wants to approach this game, knowing what he knows now and knowing what we know now as far as players who've taken knocks and so forth? What do you think the starting 11 is going to look like on Sunday?
I think they're going to go as close to a full strength lineup as possible. You know, I think this is, you came out in the first game in the Champions League, made a statement there, but now you're going out in MLS. This is obviously two of the better teams in the league last year, one who won the Supporter Shield, one who won MLS Cup. You're playing at home. You only have four games left in the stadium. So I think you want to make a statement. That's why I think they'll be, regardless of the yellow cards and things like that, I think there was going to be a good amount of rotation once the score got to what it was for this coming Thursday, just so you're ready. You don't want to risk anything. And, you know, as Ori has made clear, it's going to be pretty tough for Esteli to get through regardless of what the Crew put out there. So that Philly game to me seems like the one you can prioritize here and, you know, roll out your kind of big guns, so to speak, for that game.
Well, and you want to qualify for US Open. You got,
yeah, that's the other thing.
And the Crew's got two games to do that, because they're only playing two games in those first three weekends, because they have a bye week after the Philly game. No games from April 19th to April 26th.
That's a bizarre schedule quirk. And because of the US Open Cup, you have to accumulate. When do you have to be done accumulating points for qualification there?
May 3rd.
I forget.
So first three weekends, and it will go by average points per game. And the top eight teams will get to US Open Cup and join the eight lower division American teams in a 16-team tournament that's going to take place from mid-May to early June. So like we have those big schedule gaps where I think the Crew are playing Toronto FC on May 29th. That game actually starts at the exact same time as the UEFA Champions League final, which is pretty fascinating. And then their next MLS game is not till June 19th. So they might have US Open Cup in between then during that June international break sort of window where MLS is not going to have as many games.
Well, I do think, even though, as we've established, Philadelphia has definitely had some turnover in their roster and they have a lot of question marks, they showed well the other night in getting that win in a rough atmosphere down in Costa Rica. So we definitely have to take them seriously. Should we make our picks now and then pick up a couple of other points to the owners meeting and so forth? Or we want to wait until the very end to make those picks? I don't know if everybody's ready to make their picks now.
I'm as ready as I ever am, Brian.
All right, Murph, if you're ready as you ever are, you should make your pick first.
I will say the Crew get a 2-1 win. I think it'll be certainly a more competitive game. But like I said before, I think that they know what's on the line here. You know, you don't need to make a statement. You're the defending champions, right? But you don't want to start the season, especially at home, with a letdown. So, you know, I think if I would probably think differently if they had to go out and play a tough game on Thursday, but I think that they'll roll out the strong lineup and they'll handle business. It'll be a good game though. It's similar to, I think, to what they did when they played Philly last year. You know, they were always tight, interesting contest.
Yeah, I always like playing them. Those are entertaining matches. Ori?
Yeah, last season these two teams played twice in Columbus. The Crew won both occasions. Obviously, the notable game there was that November 1st daylight saving snow game in the cold with the Crew on 2-1. Christian Namath with the 44-second substitution winner. I think we could have a barn burner on our hands. Only a handful of games left at historic Crew Stadium. I think the Crew are going to beat the Union 3-2 in an exciting opening weekend MLS game, with the season kicking off and getting some nationally televised games happening on Sunday the 18th. And I think Columbus gets started off with a win. They can go all guns blazing because they know that they don't have another game for at least 8-9 days, maybe 10, depending on where that Champions League quarterfinal gets scheduled. So 3-2.
Yeah, and that's on FS1, by the way. Sam?
I think if they go, barring any other injuries or anything like that, if they start almost their A lineup, obviously with Molino being out, that might not be the case. But I think you're bringing back everybody from a championship team, and Philly's coming in, and you beat Philly twice last year. So I'm going to go with a 2-0 Crew win.
All right, 2-0. Huh. I like that. I may have to go with that. I'll let you know. Let's see who can be more bizarre, Bart or Alex. We'll start with Bart. Come in, Bart. Come in.
I read you loud and clear. 10-4 Niner. I like that, Sam. I was thinking 2-1, and I like 2-0 even better. I think you have Mensah back in. You've got, you know, Aloy Room starting once again. This is a strong defensive line. This is a Philadelphia team that they have a work on their hands against Priest in the second leg. I think he's going to be getting out of the second leg against Brielle Stelly without letting things get out of hand. I hope Caleb Porter thinks about that with his lineup, but 2-0.
2-0. All right. Hey, Alex?
Yeah, I think 2-0 is a good score line. It very well may be the correct score line, but, you know, again, I think that all of us are underestimating how much of a psychopath Caleb Porter is. And, you know, I think he's going to go out there and have the master plan, and I think Zellerion's going to be feeling it, and Zardes is going to be feeling it, and they're, you know, they're all just going to be feeling it, right? I'm going 3-0, Brian. I'm going 3-0.
3-0.
I think it's going to be a comfortable beatdown of the Philadelphia Union. Comfortable. I think, you know, maybe we'll see some substitutions in the second half. It'll be so comfortable.
Wow.
And I'm just looking forward to it. I think this is, you know, these CONCACAF Champions League games, I think, you know, maybe they were a little bit, you know, hesitant, just knowing how CONCACAF refs are and how sometimes these games can get out of hand. But I think once they're back in the comfort of the league where they are currently champions, you know, back into regular Major League Soccer play, you know, I think they're just going to, you know, they're going to be completely unrestrained. It's going to be crazy, Brian. It's going to be crazy. 3-0.
3-0. Wow, I can't go there.
3-0.
Too much respect for Philadelphia. I'm going to say 2-1. I think it's going to be a close game. I think that Bradley Wright Phillips will come on as a sub in the 75th minute and score the winner. How about that? So I have two goals on Thursday and then another one on Sunday.
Is BWP the new Josh Williams bicycle kick in every game prediction now for 2021?
Yes, it is.
BWP is going to score in every game, basically.
Yes. Yes, it is. And we'll have to have a tattoo on the line.
One of my three goals is Josh Williams.
Okay.
By the way.
Yeah, okay, good.
I'm glad I mentioned it.
We're going to start that nonsense again. Okay, there was an owners meeting today. Did anyone cover that?
Pat and I were there. We
yeah, it was it oh, put
they
it,
did not accept GCG owner's bag's request for a media credential. Put it in.
Saying it was an owners meeting is a little misleading. It was a MLS led
interview.
I was just gonna say like hype fest between and the three owners on the call were Anthony Precourt of Austin FC, D Haslam of your Columbus Crew, and was it Phil Lindor? Phil Lindor, how do you say?
Yes, Cincinnati.
FC Cincinnati. So you would
Carl Lindner.
Caller, there it is. You would think that there was some potential for some fireworks between those teams, but it was very much, it was led by one of MLSsoccer.com's writers, who did a good job with it, but it was, you know, there was a lot of love for Austin because they're the new team and she was very excited about their logo and their, all this stuff. And, you know, the only thing that was remotely interesting to me, you know, D Haslam praised Aiden Morris, which we talked about earlier, and she gave some very interesting, you know, she doesn't often talk a lot of soccer, but she's clearly started to do her homework and knows what he can bring as a young academy, you know, a homegrown player. There was a nice little shot from the Cincinnati side about like coming to get the crew or so, you know, a joke. There was lots of laughter.
That's a joke. That's for sure.
Yeah. I did think that.
Didn't they say that God was like hooking them up or whatever, that God was powering their last two seasons?
If they wanted to make a joke, they should have just like put up on the screen like a photo of their roster, because that would have got laughs like crazy. But what he said, Carl Lindner, and I'm quoting, said, "I thank God for the supernatural ascendancy of our club."
There you go.
I'm not sure what kind of ascendancy they're talking about, like maybe the all-time Anthony Precourt wooden spoon winner chart or something, but
out of hell.
Don't you know wooden spoons are omnipotent?
I
think that was in reference. They were talking about like FC Cincinnati going from an idea to an MLS club in a short period of time. But that is a strange way to phrase that. I missed that while I was on the call. Yeah.
From an idea to a mistake.
Yeah, it was about 25 minutes or so, waste of time for anyone to be on there. You could have just watched it on YouTube afterwards and realized that there was no point to it.
But Tuesday afternoon, MLS media members are going to be chilling in a Zoom at 1 p.m. with the Austin FC owner and what the hell is his other title? It's Matthew McConaughey, but I got to find this other title.
Oh, no.
What was it?
Oh, I need to get in on that.
Oh, it was the Minister of Culture. Susanna Collins was raving about that title. Matthew McConaughey, 1 p.m. Zoom, Austin FC owner and Minister of Culture. Who would be the Columbus Minister of Culture? Who are we thinking?
Frankie Haddock,
of course.
That's a good one. I like Dante. That call.
Yeah, well, Matthew McConaughey is going to. He's going to provide.
I don't think there's belief that Columbus has any culture, right? Wasn't that kind of part of the problem?
Oh.
Well, whatever. You know, yeah. Matthew McConaughey will be the only entertainment coming from that club. I mean, I kind of go back and forth on that guy. Sometimes I just love him. I think he's so entertaining. But there's this fine line where it's like, okay, too much Matthew McConaughey.
You know,
it's
you know
enough
how,
of that.
You know how Penn State plays that annoying? Right. Yeah. You know how Penn State plays that annoying lion roar every time anything happens in any game? Yeah. So every time Austin scores a goal, I bet you there's going to be a video of McConaughey going, all right, all right, all right.
No, it's going to be that Matt Beisler video where he was introduced and he had the, it was looked like a car commercial with, I think, Matthew McConaughey voicing it or something. Yeah, that should be the song.
It was supposed to be the McConaughey commercial with Matt Beisler as McConaughey. I actually really like Matthew McConaughey, so I'm very interested to see what he does in MLS. They've already like
Sam wins
marketing campaign.
It's Sam wins. Just every time they score, he just pops up on the screen going, all right, all right, all right. That's beautiful, man.
Hey, their first game against LAFC. I mean, one of the LAFC's owners is Will Ferrell. So the battle of the to start the MLS season.
Well, it brings some star power to the league. And I saw a blurb on ESPN that, of course, Don Garber's already rubbing his hands together going, okay, where can we expand to next? We need some more expansion fees. And he said San Diego, Vegas, and Phoenix. San Diego is a home – that's a slam dunk. That city has been deprived of everything but the Padres. They used to have, back in the old days, the San Diego Sockers playing at old Jack Murphy Stadium on the – burned out infield of the Padres. It was awesome. So I want to see
Are you saying that John Kempen's former team, the San Diego Loyal, coached by Landon Donovan, is not doing enough for the city of San Diego and their love for soccer?
No, and I think they need to re-embrace the San Diego Soccer's branding.
Here's one that doesn't make sense to me and never has. Phoenix trying to play MLS soccer in Phoenix. Unless you're going to play indoors like they do in Atlanta.
And you got to do it in Glendale.
Yeah, you've got to play at that stadium, which is a beautiful stadium, but was not designed for, like, at least the Mercedes-Benz was designed with soccer in mind. So the field, the dimensions, they work for that. I don't think that stadium would be great for soccer, but you cannot play an MLS schedule in the heat of Phoenix. You know, they've tried to do that in the USL with Drogba's team, and it doesn't go. I mean, they play games late at night. I mean, really late, even for local time. And it just seems, if you're going to do that at a lower level, fine. But for an MLS team, you're trying to, you know, have some credibility there. You'd either have to build an indoor stadium to some degree or come to some agreement with the Cardinals on how you're going to do it there. I think avoid that situation.
I read this book and I've got it in storage somewhere. I found it at Half Price Books like 5 years ago. It was written, I don't think it was even released in this country, which is kind of weird. It was a British publisher, but it was the history of the North American Soccer League. And they put teams everywhere. They put a team in Vegas. They put a team in Phoenix. They put a team in Hawaii. And they called the team in Hawaii the Hawaiians. And they played for one season at Aloha Stadium. It got so hot on that artificial surface, the players, they were not wearing cleats because it was just that old style artificial turf. They said, our shoes are melting on the field. It was so hot.
Did they play on a volcano? How the hell is that possible?
Practically. That's what they said. They'd play during the day and in Vegas, they would play during the day at, I imagine, Sam Boyd Stadium. It was ridiculous. They didn't think about any of this stuff. It's like, sure, put a team there. We don't care. So they had teams in all these places that were just like playing on the surface of hell or something. The surface of the sun.
But think about the home field advantage you would get if you scouted players specifically who could play in like ungodly heat, right?
Yeah.
You just built a team of like nothing but people who grew up in Death Valley, right? The whole team. You're just like Death Valley High School. You're just like, you know, pipeline straight to your first team, right? You know, think about the advantage that you would have there, you know?
Well, we'll see.
You got to scout everybody from like the most unbearably hot places on planet Earth. Build your squad.
Well, first place they got to go is San Diego. It's a nice city. The weather is always the same. It's like 73 degrees every day.
And the Padres are good now, so at least they have something to be happy about with sports after losing the Chargers recently.
Yeah. Well, they've certainly been embraced in L.A., haven't they?
He's like immediately.
What was that, Bart? You were breaking up again.
Tease Jr. just go down.
Bart, send for help. Send for help. We'll send somebody for you. We got to go because Bart's breaking up again. I think we covered everything. We've got Champions League Leg 2 on Thursday at the stadium. We're back there at the stadium on Sunday for the MLS opener. and I'm very excited about it. And thanks again to Saucy Brew Works. I'll be first in line at your beer stand on Sunday for the first time in almost, 14 months. Can't wait. So have one waiting for me there. And of course, we look forward to being at Saucy and enjoying a nice meal there where we can do the podcast in person, face to face. They're on 3rd downtown if you want to beat us there. Like and subscribe to the Massive Report podcast for Ori, for Alex, for Murph, Bart, Sam. I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD92.9. I'd appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week on the Massive Report podcast.